shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.
What's happening, everybody? Happy Monday night to you. Happy day off of work for a lot of you guys. Hope you had a great day, man. Hope you had a fantastic week. I know that mine just kicked off last week, very, very long. A fun week, but a long week. But tonight, it's going to be a lot of fun right here on Plumbo Foods Live. We got some fun guests coming on tonight. We're doing the old roundtable. I haven't had one of these in a little bit, so it's going to be fun to get some opinions on here. And clearly, you guys can all hear. Let me play his music. It's amazing here. There it is. The best co-host in the business right now. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Chef Dave Boredom. Dave, your headset is killing me.
Is it going? Is it already messing up?
Your headset is garbage. Get rid of it. 86 the headset, dude.
86. Hold on.
Anyway, I love these shows, man. They're fun. They're fun roundtables with different people on talking. Dave, you've been on a couple of these now helping out, man. These roundtables are a lot of fun, right?
Oh, yeah, I dig it for sure. I think this is third one I've been on so far, Definitely, yeah, I think so.
Oh, nice, man. So, it's be a lot of fun. And you got some stuff coming up with you tomorrow we can talk about a little bit here. But I'm just, you know, listen, we usually do a long intro and all that stuff. I'm not going to do that tonight. Tonight we're going to bring on one of the other best co-hosts in the business. Ladies and gentlemen, Chef Jeff Barazzi. Jeff, bro, what's happening, brother?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Feels good.
Applause. You can't hear the applause. It's huge. Everyone's screaming for you. They're loving that you're walking out here. Look at you. Looking like $1 million, too, man. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm doing my walk-in. I'm in the basement. I'm doing my dance. I'm stomping around, slapping fans' hands. People know I'm here in the building.
Wow.
You know, things are happening.
I like all these things. Now, listen, is Monday, is that normally, like, do you get a day off on Monday for you? Or even in the season right now, is it busy?
Busy, but today's a day off. You know, I had a fantastic day. I still did a little bit of work. Shout out to Trex Meat Company, getting my first big Kobe order.
Did you get some stuff from them today, or just get the order to place the order?
I got my FedEx number. It'll be here tomorrow, so I'm super, super, super excited. Get to break down a whole Kobe knuckle. It's something pretty rare. Nobody really gets it. So,
wow. Now, how much did you pay for that? Can you tell us, or is that bad to ask?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like it. I paid enough for it. I got a good price, though. They were really fair.
All right. Well, good guys. Check them out. Team Trex. They're nice dudes over there. I actually had them on the show here. Chef Guy the Butcher, right? That's who we had on here.
Yeah, Butcher and Justin. Our boy Justin.
Good times. Dave, you guys ever see any, like, Kobe beef or any high-end Wagyu up there by you?
Yeah. Mainly samples, honestly, yeah. That'll come through. But not on menus typically up here, no.
Man, this past week I did the most amazing, like, a take on a beef tataki with this beautiful piece of Wagyu I got. I think it's called Kiwami Wagyu. I got, now it's Australian, so it's kind of against the stuff that we've been talking about in the past here. But yeah, it's Kiwami was the Wagyu that I've had. But honestly, it was delicious. I posted on Instagram. I'm not sure if you boys saw it, but
I did. The picture was beautiful. Looked great.
Oh man, it was amazing. Take on a tataki where I just lightly seared it, and then I ended up brushing it with this miso and citrus stuff I marinated. I almost macerated, like, green onion sliced really thin in.
Nice.
The maceration of the green onion was so delicious. I actually went by with a little brush and some of that and just brushed it lightly on the plates after I served it. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good, yeah.
It was baller, man. I love good meat like that, man. Good meat is delicious.
Bet you like the meat.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Wait.
Okay, terrific.
Moving on. I got to get the sound effects thing fixed. It's killing me. I want you guys to hear it so bad. Yeah, man. I think, though, but...
Wait, hold on. There's sound effects?
Oh, Jesus. Listen, I think we're finding, though, more and more these days, though, that people actually aren't afraid to pay for that kind of meat or pay for the quality of something like that. I mean...
No way. I agree with you.
It's almost like you kind of, you know, yeah, we'll pay for that. And even you, Dave, like, working in a hotel environment, a very nice upscale hotel, the restaurant that you're at. I mean, I'm sure you guys get some pretty high-end products, right, that aren't cheap.
Yeah, we actually have a decent amount. Switched up the summer menu because the winter menu's so heavy with it, so...
Well, what are they? We gotta guess what the fuck they are? I mean, Jesus Christ.
we have a lot of dry-aged beefs. Morels, we're still somehow getting that.
Nice.
And our cheeses are kind of crazy. We had one come in. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's like $23 a pound, and we're doing cheese plates with it to where you're getting probably an ounce of that cheese.
Nice.
So,
but you don't know what kind of cheese it is?
No, I eat it every day, but I should probably learn how to pronounce it, honestly.
Nah, you have a microphone. You're an expert.
What's that?
You're an expert. You don't need to worry about that. Hey, I just want everybody to know I have a brand new app on my phone called Sky Guide. It's the coolest shit I've ever seen in my life. It just notified me that if you go outside right now, I'm sorry, in 5 minutes, the International Space Station is doing a flyover and we can see it. It'll be a moving star in the sky.
That's pretty sweet.
I saw it last night. It's pretty freaking dope to be able to see that shit.
Nice.
I don't know. It's weird. Jeff, I'm sorry. I go on tangents. You know, I have kids, so I gotta like do shit like that.
Oh, I love that stuff, man. I think it's sweet. I think it's fantastic.
It's fun. I think it's fun. So listen, guys, it's going to be a fun roundtable tonight. We're going to be joining a little by Cupcake Casey Schiller, one of the sweetest guys I know. I met him at that ACF event that I was a judge at and at ProStart, and Casey's great. He's been a guest in this program. I told him, I said, listen, man, you're such a great talker, and you're such a great, a guy for this business. You're a great ambassador for this business because he's such a positive guy. I mean, he was actually Educator of the Year. Culinary Educator of the Year, which is pretty cool to see. So having him on here will definitely give a perspective. It's weird because I got to tell you guys, usually this about this point in time in the season for me, I start getting a little bit bitter and a little bit annoyed. Not bad, but like, you know, they get long weeks and get stuff like that. But dude, I'm not at all. Like, I'm rip-roaring and ready to go, and I'm kind of upset that I've only got 4 weeks left in my season.
Yeah, I hear you, bro. Me too.
I mean, but I'm not tired. I'm ready to go. Let's do this.
No, man, I got a lot. We're gonna be really busy, man. We got a lot big things on the horizon, I think, for everybody. I really do.
And we're supposed to have Robbie on here with us, but he's kind of falling apart on me. I talked to him earlier. He was super excited, and
Skype's a bitch.
That's what he kept saying. I'm just sending him a text. I was like, dude, Skype, what's the story? Because Robbie's great because he's a great talker. Then you put him in front of people talking, he gets a little bit nervous. Unless he's drinking, which he's been doing all day today. So, well, listen, obviously, guys, we got to talk a little bit. The big news in the culinary world today, it just feels like it feels like every day we get a text or a social media notification or something that we're just losing another chef, and we lost an icon today, but not to, anything bad, not to drug overdose or killing himself or, taking the easy way out sort of thing. Chef Joel Robuchon died today. An amazing chef, and I think one of the best quotes that this man ever said, and I love it. And I try to look at these quotes, especially from these chefs who kind of have built, put the foundation for all the legs that we stand on. He always said that there's no such thing as a perfect meal. One can always do better, and I try really hard to live that when I make food. I try to make great food. I try really hard to make beautiful plates using great technique and cooking things the right way. But it's not always the easiest way to do stuff,
absolutely.
But I think you find a guy like this who was he drew a lot of inspiration from like just the simplicity of food. Like, he would really enjoy the food for what it was and wouldn't put a lot of work into it, and very classical French. And of course we have to bring up the fact that this guy was no one had more Michelin stars than this gentleman did ever. So losing a great today. And of course, Jeff, the mashed potatoes, right?
Yeah, mashed potatoes. I mean, so honestly, he so many signature dishes that and styles and things that came at his restaurant that were just replicated around the world. You know what I mean? In hotels and right. He did a lot of game changing things. Just a lot. Like a lot of really, and he was always like the cutting edge of like the really affluent meal.
Setting the table for the rest of us, basically.
Yeah. He was like the father of the tasting menu, like the modern tasting menu. I ate at one of his places in Vegas. Super memorable meal, 23 courses or something like that. Each one 2 bites, but just so special with like so many different little components that stood out, but that worked well together. And like, you know, it was really, really a cool thing. You know, I was lucky enough to eat there kind of early on, and not really too early on, but I guess kind of midway.
I mean, you look at this guy like this, though. Just, I mean, he had so many cookbooks and great restaurants, but never a guy who was much of a television guy. I mean, Dave, do you think that, I don't know, you look at these old school chefs like this, and they're doing it the right way, where it's, you know, it's not much. He had a social media account, he had Instagram, all that stuff, but it wasn't much like, this guy's a TV chef. Do we still need these people, or can we still do this the old-fashioned way, where you make a great living for yourself as a chef, you build a name for yourself as a chef? I mean, or is TV the fast way to it?
I think we still need these people, but in a way we kind of need some way to expose them to the mainstream.
Right.
Not necessarily TV, but we need the people that are like, you know, work their way up, do it all the right way. But a lot of times for people outside of the industry to actually know who they are is TV.
So I mean, listen, let me ask you this, man. Jeff, do you think, all right, this is gonna be a tough question, man, but this is where my, like, the second I saw this morning, this is where my head went. If you look today at how many posts you saw on social media about Chef Robichon and what happened to him and him passing away, you know, this is a guy who changed food, who was a great ambassador for food and what we do and making great food and, you know, winning as many Michelin stars as this guy did, which, dude, there is no joke when it comes to doing that, right, compared to when Anthony Bourdain killed himself. It's not even comparable, is it? I mean, I'll get your opinion. Go ahead, Dave. You can go first.
I saw a ton, man, about Joel Robichon. I saw so many. I don't know.
Dave?
For mine, I saw maybe 3 or 4 posts. And then for Anthony Bourdain, it was probably my whole feed. I actually got rid of my Facebook that day because it took over everything, and I just haven't gotten it back since. So there's definitely a pretty big comparison, you know, because I had, like I said, 3 on Instagram for Robichon, but seriously, the whole feed when Bourdain died was pretty much everybody.
That's what I'm saying, like, but you, that's kind of one of the frustrations I had, Jeff, when it came to this. I mean, listen, depends on who you follow and things like that. Like, I did see a lot of posts about this, but it was definitely nowhere near even comparable to what I saw when Bourdain died. Jeff, did we lose you?
I also think that like you said, Joel Robichon didn't do much TV. Joel Robichon was a chef who cooked great food and had amazing restaurants, and unless you were a real foodie and were going after his restaurants, you didn't really know him. He wasn't a household name. He was a he was a foodie's name, and he was a chef's name. You know, he wasn't Anthony Bourdain was like this, like, sexy guy who, like, sensationalized, you know, certain parts of chefing and wrote some, you know, books that influenced a lot of people, and also
I mean, he mentored, you know, Gordon Ramsay and Eric Rip. I mean, he so many people.
Absolutely, but he didn't do that on television, and nor did he write and promote them on the road or do TV shows or anything like that. So it's like, he didn't touch as many people's lives the way Anthony Bourdain did. Anthony Bourdain, arguably, when you're on television, there's a lot of people who connect with you just because they see your face on TV. So they see you and they hear what you're saying, and they like think that, like, after 5 years of watching you on TV, you're like, oh, I love this guy. You know what I mean? Like, there was a lot more of that with Anthony Bourdain, regardless of whether he killed himself or however he died. You know, I mean, I think, you know, you can't get caught up on how he died. I mean, the fact of the matter is someone died, and it's, you know, it's like, it is what it is. You know what I mean? It's like, you gotta, like, you know.
No, there's some truth to that. I mean, the get caught up in how they died, I disagree with that. I think you can. I think that really sets your whole legacy. You know, staying away from that for now and talking more about Chef Robichon, but, like, you see a guy like this who comes in, has been doing this just basically, you know, humping away for years and years and years. I mean, the guy had, I mean, the things that this guy had done, like, just, I mean, he did some TV in France, but I think it's like doing local TV. I mean, everybody does local TV. That's fine. But
I mean, he was huge in France. You know, I don't have any French friends who post on my page. So it's like, I mean, who knows what they're like in France? It could be crazy. you know?
Yeah, but you figure, I mean, listen, we all think of food TV, of course, as Americans. We think of the Food Network. You know, we don't think of, you know, Food Network Canada, which is also huge, but it's a completely separate entity. But, like, this guy, you know, he apparently, quote, retired at the age of 50, right? And then had a comeback opening several different restaurants but having people do it. You know, he hosted a French show, kind of, but not really for a very short amount of time. There wasn't any. I guess what I'm getting at here is it wasn't like a big acclaim thing here in the States, you know, which is, I guess my point is that it seems like you have these chefs who are amazing chefs, who have done amazing things and cook amazing food, but it's almost not like a big deal in our country because we don't pay attention to them. Because we, again, people don't take the time to learn where they come from. You know, if you don't know where you come from, how can you know where you're going? I mean, Dave, are you with me or am I crazy?
No, I totally get what you're saying, but in America, nobody actually cares unless there's like some sort of flair or something to watch or some sort of like, oh, hey, they're going here, they're going there.
Right. Like Joe Rubinstein had Michelin stars. That's great. Oh, wait, you won Chopped? That's cool. Right. Everybody's been on that show. Stop it. It doesn't even matter anymore. Who cares?
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of what it is. I mean, if they're liking the food the person's making, but they don't like the actual person they're seeing. You know what I mean? It's kind of like what TV's done to the industry.
Jeff, let me ask you this question, man. What matters more in our industry right now, literally right now, is the PR in the industry or is it the food the chef makes? And not matters more to me or you, but matters more to the customer, the people that we actually serve food to.
Well, I mean, I think that is sort of a loaded question because
it is.
I think
I did it on purpose.
You know, absolutely, there's PR plays a huge role in getting people to your restaurant and seeing who you are and noticing who you are. Unless you aim for like a more of a local crowd, like, you know, I really loved what you know, meeting Intoxicated on your show last time. I really loved, you know, hearing all the stuff you said about like aiming at all these local people, you know, like. And building that kind of a crowd for a restaurant, I you know, not getting so caught up on trying to become a celebrity.
That was good advice, though, wasn't it?
I think it's amazing advice, and I think there's so many chefs out there that are just murdering it at their restaurant, and we just haven't ever heard of them because, you know, nobody from the fucking the Michelin badges have shown up there, or nobody's blown through their town, and, you know, they're probably farming to table and like, you know, rooftop garden to the, you know, whatever hot thing you've probably heard of. These probably somebody's been doing it somewhere forever and hasn't got any credit for it, you know? So.
Totally. Wow. Well, listen, I think it's the world we live in now. Unfortunately, I think that there's just, you know, based on the food, you know, it's not just always about the food anymore. I think the PR plays a big part in it. And chefs like Chef Joel Rubinstein, who maybe, we all know who he was, as because we're chefs, but, you know, like, my wife would have no idea who he is. And, you know, it doesn't have that giant PR machine behind him that, you know, someone like a Anthony Bourdain would have behind him. And, you know, no disrespect to an Anthony Bourdain, but I think that I just wish we could get a little bit more, you know, just a little bit more accolades here, I guess, in the States for someone like this gentleman when he dies. I mean, cancer. He died from cancer. He didn't die from doing crazy bad things. I mean, he left the business in you know, the early, late, mid-90s or whatever because he was worried about his friends all dying from stress and heart attacks. Like, he realized what was going on, and he left. So, big shout-out, Chef Joel Rubinstein. Rest in peace. Hope you're making great food wherever you are. You're teaching somebody something, because I'm sure that's what you did, Chef. So, you will be missed, sir. And I am actually going to order right now a Joel Rubinstein book to have, because I haven't checked one out in a long time, so I'm going to order one. I think we all should. You can buy these cookbooks for cheap as shit. You go on Amazon or eBay, you can get these books for like $2. You should definitely get one. I mean, the guy's got like 100 of them. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
That's it. Well, Dave, that was your entrance to plug there, but you didn't do it.
Oh, man, I'm having technical difficulties.
All right, well, go for it.
All right.
Technical difficulties, too many technical difficulties for him. It's going to be a roundtable night, man. Having a lot of fun. Rest in peace, Chef Joel Rubinstein. Sorry to lose you. Next time, though, we have a death of a chef. I have a feeling it's not going to be such a pleasant story. Wait, actually, you know what, Jeff? Let me ask you this, dude.
Was that a threat? What'd you just say to me, motherfucker?
Motherfucker, what you talking about? Let me ask you this, dude, in complete honesty. Now, is it not as... This is going to sound weird. Are we not seeing as much heat on Joel Robuchon for dying because it wasn't a, you know...
What do you mean?
I'm trying to figure out how to word it without sounding like a douchebag. Because it wasn't like the media doesn't romanticize it as much as they did with Anthony Bourdain. Like, Anthony Bourdain killed himself. Oh, he was a... You know, he was a one of the lost boys. He was a lost soul. You know, he was hurting inside. Where Joel Robuchon was, he died of cancer. I mean, is that why we haven't seen much about it, even on in regular media or mainstream media?
Well, I think he was a little bit more of a private individual, man. I don't think that he was in the limelight. Like, you know, I think he ran a bunch of restaurants. I think he mentored a bunch of great chefs. I think he did do some stuff. I think he, like, appeared on a bunch of TV shows. But I don't think he was as in the limelight in America as, you know, other people. That's just, I think, the bottom line. I think it's a huge loss in the community. I think a lot of people are going to feel it. And it's just not going to be the people maybe who are going to turn to Instagram or Facebook to talk about it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that, man. I mean, that's it's just not a household name for the, you know, quote foodie. I hate that fucking word, but, you know, it's just not a household name for those people.
Joined tonight on the round table by Chef Jeff Brati, a.k.a. Forking Chef. Follow his Instagram at Forking Chef. And he just wants everyone to be a good person.
He just wants everyone to be a good person. That's fucking random.
that's perfect. That was perfect. Thank you. I feel really good. I'm gonna have my mom listen to the show now.
A gentleman named Meat is chiming in from Williamsburg, Virginia, and he wants to know if he thinks it's safe to cook with a boner. Anybody want to chime in on that?
What?
That's the question I just got. Is it safe to cook with a boner?
Cook with a
is
boner?
It safe to cook with a boner?
Absolutely.
I mean, is there like grease?
Says,
I mean, is there
you,
other things
just,
splashing?
He said, do you just hang a hand towel over that shit and keep going?
Hand towel over that shit? Well, he answered his own question. I mean, I think it's a great question, dude.
Jeff's like, that's a great question. There you go. You guys have nothing on that? I mean, that's honestly, I think that's probably the answer. Like, I'm going to put a hand towel. Unfortunately for me, after three kids, it's a very small hand towel. Not even impressive at all.
Wait.
Did it shrink after three kids?
That's what I was going to say. It gets smaller.
Well, it just, yeah, kind of. It just kind of becomes more of an innie than anything else. You know, I'm a grower, not a shower, right? Let's just leave it at that.
Right.
Judgment free.
Yeah.
Well, listen, let's move on here a little bit, man. Stop talking about that shit. Move on to Chef. And rest in peace, Chef Joel Robuchon. Industry is going through a lot of changes, man. You're seeing so many people kind of bring out into the limelight the hours that we work, the type of environments that we work in, especially here in the summertime. Most kitchens are not air conditioned and things like that. It's hot as piss. Do you guys think that these kitchens, like people, there should be some sort of, I don't know, what do they call it? A group of people that ensure that an environment's made a certain way, a union, like a universal union, not just hotel unions or not just like for a casino type union, but a universal union for culinary people. I know they have them in New York City and places like that, but I mean like a global union of culinary people who, if a restaurant has X number of employees, has to be a part of, but they take certain things, and then I'm talking about the minimal things, the things like an air-conditioned kitchen. The things like, you know, not having to work a 10-hour shift, working an 8-hour shift like everybody else does. Do you think that there's something like that could ever happen, number one? And number two, do you think it is something that we need? Dave, what do you think?
See, that's the thing. Like, I like 10-hour days. I like hot-ass kitchens. I don't know how to, like, really... If there was something like that, there would be like services that wouldn't happen, honestly.
Like what?
Because no. What do you mean? Like if there was a union that's like, oh, your kitchen's at 110 right now, you guys aren't allowed to cook. That kills service.
Right, but it would be something that would have to be, or it'd be like a like a notch or like a write-up for it or something. After three strikes, they get a fine or something like that. So it wouldn't just be, you know, every single time, but it would be something that was taken care of ahead of time.
Yeah. I mean, for something like, you know, temperature, long days, I'm fine with. I'd rather deal with that and then know that, you know, I'm still going to get my hours, get my paycheck, and then still be fine throughout the week. I don't want someone coming in and shutting down service, then I'm like, hey, I actually needed this day to pay my light bill, or, you know what I mean?
Jeff, what do you think? I like your answer. That was a good answer.
I mean, it's like we know what we're getting into.
Yeah. It's a tough business, man. It's glorified in so many ways, but it's you know, cooking's long hours and hard work, you know. It's bottom line.
It is, but the same thing with professional football. You know, they all know what they're getting into when they do it, but they're changing the rules of the game and changing things, so it's going to change the whole landscape of it. Professional football is way different now than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, but is that the players or is that the actual organization?
It's the players' union that's made the changes. The NFLPA is the one who's forced all the changes. We have another set of whole new rules coming out this year. The point of saying that is that even though our business is the way it is because it's always been that way, doesn't mean that it can't change.
All right. I'm not saying that I'm not for changes in the industry, and I'm not saying – but I think that it's not just – I mean, people just have to start coming off money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, I mean, what are we talking about? You know, it's like, I mean, work is always going to be work. It's always going to be the long hours. It's like, and it's just like, it's the money's, I don't know where all the money's going to come from in a lot of restaurants.
That's,
you know,
that's
some places make a ton of money, you know what I mean? And they could probably spread it out a little bit more amongst some of the people, but I mean, some of these places, like, you know, I have a friend who works for one of these seasonal places in Montauk that's huge and busy, and he's one of the chefs, and, well, he's like the chef, and I mean, you know, he makes a decent salary, but it's not like he's going to be a millionaire when he retires, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, and you know, he fucking works like a dog, you know, for like 9 months out of the year. He's working, like, between staffing and, like, writing the menus and getting everything ready, and then, like, you know, they're doing, like, 1,500 covers a day or some crazy shit, you know what I mean? It's like,
It's insane how much we do, but we don't think twice about it. That's the whole part. People like you, like myself, people who have 20 years in this business don't think twice about it. But there is a group of people, a group of younger chefs who think we need to make a change, and I don't know if we do or not.
Well, there's a lot of things we do need to change for sure, and I do think like you know, sometimes better wages for some people is a big thing. I think, you know, healthcare is really important. You know, I think that. You know, I just posted something the other day. You know, Chad posted something about, like, you know, repetition. You know, Chad from True Cooks posted something about repetition being the, you know, the key to something. And I was like, it's also the key to back pain, because it's like, you know, you do the same fucking move, you know, 10,000 times and you feel that shit. You know, you feel it, you know. You know, you work saute forever and you do it with that, your right arm or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you feel it in your elbow. It's like you're a tennis player or like a football player, anything you're saying, you know?
Totally. There we go. I thought we had a little technical difficulty there. Listen, you guys, we got the one and only Cupcake Casey joining us right now. He's on the line. He's here with us. We're lucky to have him. Former Culinary Educator of the Year, an all-around super nice guy. Make sure you follow him at STL Pastry. There he is, Cupcake Casey. Casey, my brother, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you, Plum?
Oh, I am awesome, dude. We're joined. You're on the phone right now with us. We got the one and only Chef Jeff Perazzi. He's out in the Hamptons. And, of course, the one and only Dave Bortnum is with us as well.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Great to meet you.
Casey, man, I know you're out in San Antonio, man. You're having an event out there and doing a demo and whatnot, which is awesome. And, dude, I was just telling these boys before we got the show started how much I loved hanging out with you and I missed you. It's been way too long since you and I have hung out. And I tell you what, if you met these two good brothers I have on the line right now with us, you would fall in love with these guys, too. It's a good group of chefs right here on this phone right now.
I hear the makings of a great event with all of us.
Yes, it would be.
Put it together.
That's it. That's it. That's it. We'll have to make that shit happen for sure. Casey, we just got done talking about Chef Joel Robuchon. I want to see if you want to throw a few lines in there for yourself, just a few parting words or your thoughts on one of the icons in the culinary industry who we just lost.
Yeah, I think it's all about mastery. And there was no one in the industry that was all about the craft of mastery. And I think that everything was with purpose. Everything was with thought. And everything had a reason. And, you know, he was one of the forefront folks to say, you know, keep menus simple, but execute it perfectly. And I think that that is still holds true today.
Yeah, I think so, man. I mean, very, very well said, Jeff. I mean, I don't think I could have said any better than that. I mean, that's something we didn't talk about, the mastery aspect of it.
Absolutely.
Really well put. So, Casey, man, what's going on with you, man? You're out in San Antonio. You were doing a demo or what?
Yeah, so I consult for I'm a product ambassador for AUI Fine Foods. It's a chocolate company that deals with Swiss-based confection products. And so they have a chocolate that's used widely in the industry. And so I just get to play with the stuff, get all the new, cool, innovative pastry ingredients. And today I did a demo for about 45 the local chefs from Austin to Houston to San Antonio, showing them what is new and what is out there. And just kind of that's what I love is getting to play with all the new shit and just showing off what the versatility of some ingredients are. So it's just right up in line with what I love doing.
Dude, you're like the Jay-Z of chocolate. That's pretty dope. That's pretty dope, man. You're traveling around. Hey, let me show you this chocolate. Everybody comes and watches. Yeah. You do a demo, you drop the mic, and you leave.
Love it.
That's what's up, man. Hey, listen, dude, your real job during the day, you're a teacher. And we've been talking a lot right before you came on here just about the industry and kind of where it's going with stuff. And we're seeing a change, how people are a little bit more open, a little bit not quite as quiet about, you know, the hot kitchens, the long hours. Are you seeing any of this in your students? Like, are they talking about any of these things? Or as a baker, is it not as bad?
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, gone are the days of starry-eyed young culinarians coming in just thinking that they're going to be the chef in, you know, 6 months and they don't need to listen and they don't need to, you know, they as long as they have a philosophy, that's all that matters. We pretty much keep it as real as it gets. And we tell them from minute one in introduction to the hospitality industry, we break down all those different styles. And I know we were talking, you were talking healthcare earlier, and that's a huge coming in. And I second that sentiment that everything has changed. And I think that the students nowadays realize that it does take hard work, that they have to, again, hone their craft, and it's going to take time. But what I think that is available to them, which maybe hadn't been available when we were all cutting our teeth, is they have the ability to pivot into roles that are much more culinarily focused that never were. So the country club jobs are still there. The big hotels are still there. But now you have a lot of, you know, again, personal chefs, the healthcare market. These are all things that many, many years ago were, you know, reheating meals from a freezer. And now it's chef crafted. It's all about the dietary needs. It's all about maintaining specific calorie intakes. And so the students need to learn so much more than just the cooking aspect, but it's also the wholeness that we provide as cooks to the body.
You know, Jeff, what do you think, man? Because I think he's got a really good point there. You're seeing the industry change as when it comes to that sort of stuff, as you're seeing obviously the more the home cooking type services like Blue Apron, Purple Carrot, things like that. People are becoming more interested in food, more they want to learn more about it. They're caring more about it. They're asking more questions. All these things are great. But I think Casey's got a great point how these questions and this education that's happening in our industry to the regular everyday person, the banker, the lawyer, the, you know, the accountant who does these things, because of the education, you're seeing more and more people you know, eating less at these, you know, fast food dinners on their car on the way home, or eating less of the corporate style restaurants, and keeping guys like you and I in business.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. I mean, there's this whole movement for the fast casual, but healthy. You know, like everyone wants something like this. This healthy option that they can grab on the go, but not feel like a piece of garbage about. You know, like because they had a Big Mac or whatever.
You know, what was the guy's name? What was the guy's name who did fast food? Super Size Me. Do you guys remember his name? The director.
Yeah, Morgan Spurlock.
Yes. So he did a – I don't know if you guys saw it. It was about a year ago. He did a whole thing where he actually took a chicken restaurant. Like he opened a chicken restaurant in – it's like West Virginia or someplace like that, some small state. And when you walk in the door, it was all very farmy. You guys all know what I'm talking about. Wooden tables, pictures of chickens on the wall. But it was like a fast, casual restaurant, right? And it gave you the impression – that there was pictures of like farmers holding chickens and like smiling, and you know, like a chef with a farmer and a chicken, like very like giving off that vibe that it's a farm to table, like we care about everything. The restaurant was open for a week before the first person noticed. On each table there was a table tent that explained that their chicken comes from, it's local, it comes from a local company, but it's a giant company that does the same kind of chicken that KFC uses, the same kind of chicken that McDonald's uses, and that's what it was. But it was all a, he's doing a movie about it, where they open this restaurant, how people go with perception and don't pay attention to the details. I mean, I think movies like that are kind of might, I don't know, make some of us look bad, like people just assume that. I mean, Casey, am I crazy?
I think that the diners are more educated, and the diners love to jump on the bandwagon of farm to table and macro and micro and all of these different things. And they, number one, they don't realize what that means. And if there's enough buzzwords, they're going to jump on there, because no one wants to be the person at the table who doesn't know what something on the menu is or what that French pronunciation is or anything else. So they all just go along with it. And, you know, I think that we're seeing that there are some really great farmers that are providing some really, really great things. 100%. But you know what? The Cisco truck is still pulling up to these restaurants every single day, too.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. And people still like it. And people, I don't know if they even like it, but I don't think people realize it. There's a restaurant here locally by me that really gives that same feel, but they're getting pre-cut steaks from Cisco that are vacuum sealed, and who knows when they were cut. I don't know. I know I'm not shitting on Cisco or anything like that. Some people have to use it. It's cool. Some people, it's the best option that they have. But I just think it's how you portray yourself. I don't think we should, you know, lie to the customers, you know?
Tonight we have the one and only Cupcake Casey, former culinary educator of the year. Follow him on Instagram at STL Pastry.
That's our co-host Dave. He's jumping in there doing our plugs tonight, Casey. That was pretty good, right? It's good radio
voice. Yeah, Dave, that was seamless, man. Great transition.
Thanks, nice, appreciate it.
So you were talking about how you see the day. You said the days of you know, the starry-eyed cook coming in and doing stuff with the students that you're seeing. And Jeff, you heard what Casey was talking about there. How does that make you feel, man? Does it make you feel like we need to do something different there? Can we change this? Can we get back to those guys who just want to cook food?
I think it all gets back to we're here to train the young culinarians in their knife skills, their hand skills, and the proper craft of cooking. And that's, at the end of the day, what I enjoy most about going into school every day, is because this is a craft. This is an art. This is absolutely science on my end with the baking side.
100%.
And that, before anything, is what matters, because you have to have a culinary identity. You have to have the chops to back it up if you're going to persuade others to put your food in their mouth.
100%. Jeff, what do you think, man? Are you with that? Is it? Should we do something different?
No, I mean, he would know better than I do. I'm not educating any.
Well, but the reason why you have a great, I think why you have a great point of view and perspective is because you have a company that places chefs in private homes for parties. So you definitely talk to a lot of these culinarians, well, both young and old.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But I think. you know, I don't blame anything, but I just think the way the world has worked out, you know, the food has become really, really popular, and it's been sensationalized on television, and it's given people sort of this like, you know, this thing of grandeur where it's, I mean, it is great if you love it, you know, but if you don't love it and you get into it because you think you're going to get rich and you think you're going to become like a rock star, like sometimes you're going to be really disappointed. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah, like if you pay your dues or if you're a good talker and you get in the right places and you put yourself in like, you know, if it's like if you hear that food is really great in one area and you want to learn how to cook and you go immerse yourself in it, and then you hear that there's money in another area and you get out there and you can talk the right jazz and you get a great job working for a family, making tons of money as a private chef, and that's what you really enjoy doing, well, then you're a success, right? You know, it's like, and if you want to get on TV and you get to finally get on television, then that guy's a success. I don't know. You know, I mean, I feel like cooking, there's so many different ways you can kind of end up. It doesn't just have to be like working in a restaurant. You know what I mean? You can, it can take you so many different directions now, you know?
Yeah. I think you're right. I think that what's happened is, I mean, you'll even see that, you know, a lot of these companies who, for instance, I graduated from the CIA, and now, I mean, I still get the emails about what's, you know, there are job fairs and things like that. And one of the good things about CIA is that everybody goes to a CIA job fair. Every fucking company does. If you ever are, if you graduate from CIA and you were looking for a job, if you go to the job fair, you will leave with a job. Bottom line. But what's interesting is that you'll find these companies who are coming in, like, you know, like Casey was saying, like, you know, you'll find these healthcare type companies, or you'll find, you know, these corporate cafe type companies. But here's the thing. They come in. And it happened to my good buddy, our friend of the show, Dimitri, here in the city. He works at 30 Rock now in a corporate building. They came to him and said, hey, we have a job that's basically, you know, banker's hour type scenario. You can make your menus every day. You can make amazing food. Oh, and P.S., here's healthcare, full benefits. Oh, and we're going to pay you a lot more money than any restaurant's going to pay you. Just come in here and make great food. I mean, I think you're seeing more and more jobs like that happen, like Casey was saying, because of the education that people are getting from a culinary standpoint. Nobody wants to eat shit food anymore, Casey.
No, absolutely. And you know where that's the prevalent the most now? College campuses. The universities are now having, like, literally, I just was watching that they're now growing organic produce to be amazing. Used in the dorm cafeterias. And no matter if you're at CIA or Johnson & Wales, we never had the that type of food in our dorms. Now we're talking the Ivy Leagues are just, and not even Ivy Leagues, just any of these colleges are so prone.
I mean, and they're paying good money. That's the thing. They're not bringing you in and saying, oh, you're going to be the quote-unquote chef. We're going to pay you $30,000 a year. No, man, you're finding a school in Missouri who's going to bring you in and hire you at $60,000-$80,000 a year, and out there, that's good ass money.
It's funny you say that. You know, I grew up in Ithaca, and I have a lot of friends who cook up there, and a lot of them are working for fraternities and stuff like that now, because again, paid like great money to cook for, like, you know, a handful of guys or a handful of girls, you know, and make like chicken salads and whatever the hell they want, and then like put out banquets.
Yeah.
And great food, but it's like not hard work, and it's like, compared to like grinding on the line,
right?
It's really great, you know.
But Dave, there is something to be said for grinding on a line and paying your dues, doing that sort of stuff, still, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people start grinding on the line, and that's where you at least learn the basics. And then once you learn that, you can go pretty much anywhere in the direction that you want to, or once you get it down.
I mean, are you seeing any of this stuff? Dave lives in the Detroit area, Casey, and are you seeing kind of any of this stuff happening up there, any of this change, any of that shift kind of in our thinking when it comes to food?
When it comes to food, yeah, there is a lot of local. Well, it's kind of hard to classify local, but there's a lot of Michigan product being used here.
People are just expecting more, aren't they?
Oh, definitely, definitely. There's a lot of like micro farms in Detroit now, and a lot of that stuff gets used.
Right.
Most of that's like certified organic too, but there's definitely an awareness of what's going on.
Listen, gentlemen, I'm not going to lie, gentlemen. I was running late from my ferry to get home on Sunday, and I stopped at Wendy's and got myself a junior bacon double with cheese, and that shit was delicious. it was awesome. Even in the world we live in now with like our Kraft burgers and shit like that, sometimes a junior bacon with cheese is awesome.
Yeah, it's actually been a minute. I think I'm going to go get one after the show.
Funny, Dave, because when I was hanging with Casey at in Rhode Island, you know, he and I have been drinking, allegedly, and we're having a fun night, allegedly. And next thing you know, this motherfucker has these, like, what'd you call them, Casey? The hot dogs that we had. It was local.
Yeah, they're hot wieners. Yeah, local hot wieners.
The second you said hot wiener, Jeff perked up. He's like, he said wiener. They were hot. They were fucking delicious. Or were they? Were we just drunk?
Well, it's just always a good time to share a wiener with you.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Never a bad.
But you know, late night. But here's what I thought was so cool about what Casey did there. Like, it was late night. We all have late night cravings, late night food. We all do that late night run to Taco Bell, that late night drunk run to 7-Eleven. You're like, oh, Death Dog and some cheese nachos sounds delicious, even though the cheese is in a bag. But Casey made some, like, local food from Rhode Island happen from some, I don't know, what the hell was the place called you ordered from, Casey? Do you remember or no?
That was the Olneyville, New York system, and thank you to Uber Eats.
There you go. He brought some, like, local hot dogs in from Uber Eats, and we sat down in this restaurant, and we ate them. And my God, it was delicious. I'd eat 9 of them right now. But it was still local food. That's the whole point of what I'm getting at here. Like, even, like, late night, you can still find things like that, Jeff. I mean, even out in the Hamptons. Jeff, do you have a chance to find local food like that?
Local, what do you mean?
Like local sushi late night, or local, like, local chef food on a late night basis.
Nah, there's no late night scene really here for local food. Like,
so when you get off work, if you're starving, you have to make it yourself, or can you go?
Yeah, basically. I mean, kitchens aren't open. They're just not open that late. I don't think it's not like. I mean, I guess there's a few places you can go pop in, but I don't really go out, man. You know, I'm like old and lazy. I just, I need to work.
Well, thanks for forwarding that conversation. That was fun.
Yeah. Sorry, man. Yeah, man. There's all these great places. I just don't know. Sorry.
But Casey, I know you kind of work a little bit different hours now too, but you travel, man. Are you finding it's easier to find great late night chef food now, maybe easier than it was 10 years ago?
Oh, hell yeah. I was in Chicago last week. And
why did you tell me? I got friends. I could have totally set you up some awesome shit.
Oh, dang. Like, I totally ended up at this, like, really upscale dive diner. And so they had it's totally one flat top grill, and they were doing a slab of bacon that was probably 3/4 inch thick. It might as well have been pork belly. Doing freshly ground, you know, short rib burger, but on one flat top with one fryer, dunking fries in duck fat, and the line was out the door. Like, it's so funny that it was, you know, it was 11:30 at night, and Au Cheval was freaking rocking. And oh, by the way, they had a whole mixology program. So, you know, I totally was in my hipster heaven.
Dave, for you out in Detroit, man, finding late night great food isn't that hard because it's a city type area, right?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. There's a lot of places open till at least midnight, and then you'll have a couple hole in the walls throughout the neighborhood that'll stay open till about 4 o'clock in the morning for us.
Damn, there you go. That's what's up, man. I think it's easier and easier to find great late night food. You know, when I'm working out in Montauk, and Casey, we talk as a private chef. It's my busy season. I work in Montauk, New York, 4 days a week. And for me, my go-to place is the Yacht Club in Montauk because they'll serve pizza late night, and they actually make the dough. They're doing everything the right way. And I'm not trying to change the world by saying they're making dough, but you'll find so many places like this that are resort-type places that wouldn't actually do that. And they have a whole method where they make everything. The shit's fucking delicious late night. What's better than pizza when it's midnight and you've been drinking?
Yeah, but you have to eat it with your pinky up.
Of course I do. What do you think, I'm an animal? Maybe you do. I don't know.
I think that everyone's in drinking their single barrel scotch in the Hamptons. So that's probably why there's no late night scene.
No, they're all drinking frosé right now, which makes me feel even question my own sexuality when I even say it. Although Dave had some frosé the other night, which was nice.
No, there was tequila in it too.
That doesn't
so.
Make it, you can't make it better. You can't make Jeff Dave
tequila
called
makes
me.
Everything better.
He was like, "I got a frosé to go. I feel like I'm drinking this. I'm a Slurpee from 7-Eleven. I put tequila on it. Does that mean I'm still questionable sexuality?" And I said, "Yes."
Yeah, I agree with that.
Casey, what do you think? Let's just get another vote.
Frosé margaritas for all.
Yeah, I also agree with that.
Listen, the two dining companions that I had tonight both had frosé with dinner. So, you know,
sakes.
Everyone's on that train, and you know, let them take some shitty wine and put it in the Slurpee machine.
They even have frosé in Texas. Come on,
I'm telling you. Listen, with the food cost being so low, I'll sell them every day.
All right, so Jeff, apparently we got to make like a frosé, like frosé, like raw fish dish or something.
What? Yeah, that sounds great.
Hey, let me ask you guys this, man, and Casey, I'd love to get your opinion on it, and it's going to be a bit of a touchy subject, and I don't want anybody to feel weird about it, but with things like racism being such a buzzword these days for media, and with things like sexual assault being a buzzword for things in the media, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. In my history of working in a kitchen, and I'll take the first shot here, especially with something like racism, every kitchen I've ever worked in, I don't care if you're black, white, red, purple, green, Jewish, Islamic, I don't care. As long as you can cook and work your station on the line, I don't give a fuck. I think the kitchen, in my opinion, from all of my experience, is probably one of the least racist places I've ever been to in my life. We're all just angry. We're not black, white, red. We're just angry and annoyed and trying to make, you know, great food. I mean, Casey, why don't you go first, man? I mean, you've been on the block.
I think
that everybody spent time working in a kitchen, you would see that. I don't think we see things the same way that, you know, it gets portrayed as far as that buzzword these days.
No, but you know where it definitely falls into play is family meal. Because let me tell you, every single one of those cooks around the table brings a killer family meal one night a week. And food is eternal. Food is universal. And I think that we have the ability of being in the industry where we all are in it for the same reason of shit has to taste good.
Right.
And whether we're doing a specific menu designed by someone that you respect or otherwise, if you're just going through the motions of, hey, I got to work the line. But when that ticket printer starts printing, everyone's on the same playing field.
Yeah.
Everything goes out the window at that point, and it just becomes, let's have this 3-hour service go without a hiccup.
Well
and
said. Well, we're all just
you know
cooks.
I think that yeah we're all cooks at the end of the day. Yeah, I mean, I think that where tensions get high are probably when there's downtime. That's why the heat of battle is the best time in a kitchen, because you are so busy that that's all you have is one singular focus and everyone's got the same goal. It's when you start trash talking during prep. It's when someone starts, you know, showing up late. Those are the things that are going to get people mad. And it's not anything race related. It's absolutely, you know what, you're expected to have your station ready. And if it's going to be anything but ready, that now can domino into your personal space. And that's where I think tensions start getting high.
If you're not here, you're making my job harder. I don't care if you're black, white, red, purple. It doesn't make a difference to me. If you're not here on time or you're not doing your station, it makes my life harder. It's not about anything else other than that.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff, what do you think? I mean, are you with me? I mean, you've definitely spent your time in the trenches and working
definitely.
The lines.
I mean, when it comes to that kind of stuff, it's all about everyone just, like you said, pulling their weight and cooking and just not being a prick.
Like, that's it. You know? I mean, listen, I mean, it's that simple. Just be cool. Just be cool.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Dave,
it's you... work. You know, everyone has to kind of like work like a Swiss clock. Everyone has to do the dance. You know,
yeah,
it's like...
Dave, you work in a big city. Do you see the same kind of thing? Is that how you guys feel around there? Or do you see more of the, you know, the quote racism stuff happening?
I've never experienced it back of house. Yeah. Everybody meshes well. I have heard front house in places I've worked in the past kind of get into that, but back house.
Can you give it a story or an example?
It's usually based off tips and things like that. So,
well, oh God, I don't even know if we should go there, but
no, but yeah, no, front, back house, everybody just meshes together, and the only reason somebody's gonna get pissed is if you're not doing your job.
You know, I've never seen a lot of sexism either. I think actually, I mean, growing up in the business, especially in the 90s and the early 90s, it definitely was in the industry, but not so much in the kitchen. But I think we live in a world now where it's probably less than it's ever been. Casey, what do you think, man? I think that the world is just changing so much, and there's so much more awareness now that part of our business is kind of going away.
Yeah, no matter what color, no matter what your gender is, your hands are the things that speak in your kitchen world. And as long as you have outstanding hand skills, that's going to speak volumes to your sous chef, your executive chef, and more importantly, your diners. So it's all about the hands. And, you know, again, I definitely still see kitchens that are male dominated, that are you know, a little less than willing to have especially a young female come into their kitchen seamlessly. But again, if that person has the hand skills and the expediency and the repetition that it takes to do what we do as a craft, that's all that matters.
Is it male dominated, or is it that there's just less female cooks? Not chefs.
Well, listen, I'm on the pastry side. I have one guy out of, I don't know, every three semesters. So I deal with a very female dominated world. And in fact, it's funny because, you know, when there are gentlemen that come to enroll in the pastry side, it's kind of one of these things of this is great. Because, again, I think that it all gets down to hand skills. And but yeah, I definitely think, especially in country clubs and places that have really long standing tenured cooks, you know, the places that have people that have been there for 14, 15 years, those are the places that it's hard to break into. But if you have, you know, kind of a an apprenticeship house or someone that's, you know, is a mentor, they're going to break down all those walls for you anyway.
Yeah, Jeff, I hear you grunting, man. What's the story?
No, I was just agreeing. I couldn't agree more, honestly. I think that's, you know, when it's a old kind of guard, it's hard to get in there. It's harder to be a new face, especially if like management or something like that, or even.
Well, let me ask you this from the standpoint of, you know, the business that you run, aside from being a private chef, man, what do you think about when you work with clients or people? And if this is a weird question to answer, I totally understand, but I don't think it will be for you. Who are like, yeah, I want a female chef, or yeah, I want a male chef, like. Is that a weird? I don't know. Like,
well, I mean,
is that okay
agency,
in this world?
You try to do your best to help your client. You know, and if they, I mean, you tell them like, listen, I can't just show you female, you know, chefs, but like, if you'd like to see a few candidates that are females as well, then I'm happy to, you know, we're happy to, of course, you know, we have some chefs who are females and who are great, you know, so we want to encourage them to get hired as well, so it's not that hard, you know, or if they say male, I mean. It gets weirder if they say something like, you know, hey, do you have any gay, you know?
Yeah, but people ask that, though. People ask that.
Far and few in between. I mean, people are crazy. You know how it is. I mean, there's a certain level of entitlement that comes with money that is, sure. You know, you can't make that shit up.
Ask that, are you like, listen, like, you know, I can't really ask that. I can't really just show you that. But
well, no,
me,
you
as client,
you
me as a client.
You can't client, feed into that because that could bite you later in life, you know, especially.
Sure.
I mean, it, even if they were joking, you can't laugh at those kind of jokes because it puts you into, like, you know, when someone tells like a super racist joke and if you like giggle or laugh at it, like even if out of discomfort, sometimes they might look at you and be like, great, that guy is like me, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, yeah, you know, like me and Plum, haha, and like, hey. They're like, and it's like, what? No,
use Dave's name next time, not mine.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean.
Dave's here to take the shots, not me.
All right, sorry, Dave. Yeah. Well, Dave lives in Detroit. He's not racist. There's no way. Mm. He's like, what is he going to do? Maybe he get killed.
Hold on, let me just play the ding.
He's a 7-foot white guy. He stands out like a beacon of light.
He is a big dude. Dave is a big dude. Yeah, it's an interesting way to go, man. Dave, you ever been in a kitchen where they say, you know, we don't hire women, or this is an all-men's kitchen? Because I've never been there.
No, I haven't been in a kitchen like that. It's kind of weird, though. Like, I remember the first time I worked with a female on the line, I was like, oh, shit, I'm totally going to have to watch what I say because I'm vulgar. And then 2 weeks into it, I was like, I can say whatever the fuck I want because she's beating me, like, her third day on anything I've ever said in this kitchen.
Yeah.
So it's like, if they work hard, it's cool. And then, honestly, it, like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Hands moving, head down, I don't care.
Right. I want to shift gears a little bit here as we move, as we get closer here to the end of the program. And, again, I appreciate you guys joining me here and talking. I think we've... we're solving a lot of the world's problems right now, which is amazing. I think we're making it happen here, over here. Casey, social media is such a big thing. It's almost like it's hard to remember a time that social media wasn't a thing. I mean, we're all old enough to remember that, but some people don't. You know, when it comes to how things work as far as, you know, getting one for the gram or posting something on Snapchat, do you find a lot of your students, man, when they'll make something baller or even make something simple, like, hey, I made vanilla ice cream today, and they'll take a picture of it on Instagram and act like that they just won an award?
Yeah, I mean, that's creating buzz for our industry. And I think that anyone who takes pride in what they do,
he's
to the point that they
guy.
Want to
isn't
share
he,
with the world.
Casey's the most positive guy ever. Isn't he? Dave, Jeff, how can you not love this guy? Look, I said something that was clearly a negative comment, and he's like, no, it creates buzz. That's awesome. I love that guy.
Sorry, you know, and again, I think that you have to take ownership of what you're doing as well. I know that there's a barbecue place in St. Louis that I will not even attempt to go to unless I've checked their Facebook page, find out what their sides are today, find out what their, you know, what their specials are. And I think that that's what this awesome culinary world does now. So you have to be on your game, but that allows you to stand out from the other folks who haven't had a website, you know, update in 6 years and still have the DOS version up. Like, come on, get with the times. And also, the other big thing is I cannot stand it when I go on and look at a menu and then I find out, oh, that menu was from 3 months ago. There's tonight's menu. Well, fuck, I wanted that seared foie gras. Why don't you have it? Fuck you and your horse. Let's go.
Yeah, now we're fucking horses. Jesus.
Yeah, man. Get that horse.
That's it. Jeff. Jeff, are you seeing – I keep thinking about fucking a horse. with the private chef industry, man, you're seeing almost all these guys. And hey, I fall victim to it too. But you know, more private chefs taking pictures and being like, "Hey, look at my stuff." Or when you're hiring a private chef, do they ever refer you to their Instagram?
Yes, for sure. I've interviewed many chefs in the last few years, and I every time I get, you know, oh, hey, man, check out my Instagram, you know, or I follow and they follow, you know, I follow a ton of chefs that I've interviewed and their friends and people like that. I think I love Instagram for that reason. I mean, I think social media is great in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, I almost get a little addicted to it sometimes. I spend too much time on it, you know, lurking and looking at people's food and like checking stuff out and getting ideas. And like, you know, I love it for that reason, though.
Join tonight on the Round Table by Chef Jeff Ferrazzi, a.k.a. Forking Chef. Follow his Instagram at Forking Chef.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Make sure you follow him. And, of course, Casey's with us, too. Casey, let me ask you this question, man.
I only get one PSA.
Dave, I mean, that was, again, these transitions are amazing. Like, really, just spot on.
Oh, shit. There you go. Oh, Dave's getting a ding. listen, but is social media a downfall for us? Are you finding more and more cooks are taking pictures when they should be plating food? That's the issue I have. Or what about guys who work for you? Anybody here on the panel who wants to chime in here? Guys who take pictures of food that may be food at the restaurant, but they act like it's theirs.
I've never done that. I do make food at work and take a picture of it.
If you ever did that, I would call you on it. That's why. You know that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's not my food. Like, I can't post somebody else's food on my Instagram.
It's not right. I mean, I've had guys work for me. We'll be doing like a 12-course dinner or whatever for 6 or 8 people. I bring somebody with me, and they'll take a picture of a plate, and they'll post it on their Instagram. I read it, and they act like it's theirs. That drives me fucking nuts. It's not like I'm like, hey, give me the attention, but like, dude, that's not your food, you know? Like, even if you just post it and give a shout-out to, hey, work in this event with Chef Plum, these are some of the baller plates we made tonight, big shout-out or whatever. Like, that would be awesome. I mean, Jeff, have you seen anything like that? Does your boy Yair post your plates, and he's like, yeah, look at my plate?
I would slap the living shit out of Yair if he did that. No, that's just joking. No. Yeah, here's my boy. He's the wind beneath my wings.
I'd love to talk to him on the show, man.
Yeah, we'll have him on sometime. He's the kosher advisor, man. He's a great dude. He holds it down for me. He's a really interesting guy.
This is Jeff's talking about his suit. Jeff is a private chef that has a sous chef, gentlemen. Have you ever seen anything like that? How awesome is that?
Let's call him co-chef. Co-chef. Sous chef, he's under me, and he's not under me unless we're off of work. No, I'm just joking.
Casey, sorry, I apologize for Jeff's vulgarity.
No problem. I'll get him a horse.
I'm kidding. The last person you'll ever offend is fucking Casey. He's a filth bag. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead. I tagged your culinary school, by the way, in the Instagram post. Go ahead. Jeff, it's still to you, brother. You were finishing the sentence. I interrupted you.
I totally lost track of my train of thought, man. I'm sorry.
No, but talking about people posting pictures of food that's not really there.
Oh, maybe. You said, oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no one's ever stolen any of my photos that I'm aware of. I would be so flattered if they did, honestly. I would probably like it.
Really? Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, I would probably be like, whoa. And if they got more likes than I did, I would be interested in knowing how they did it.
Casey,
my dopamine drop is limited. You know, I don't.
Casey, let me ask you, man, because you know it's your responsibility as a culinary educator to make sure this shit doesn't happen. So when you go into work to teach your next class, could you tell them don't post the food that's not yours?
Absolutely. I will make sure that they honor your food, chef,
yes,
and give the hashtags that are necessary.
Yep.
Again, I think that we're, you know, I am in this business to be able to turn over this business to them someday. And I think that with that comes the pride of being able to share what you're doing. I definitely agree that you don't want to misrepresent yourself, because again, especially if you're going with clients or, hey, I want to do your wedding cake. Well, let me see what you've done in the past. And all of a sudden you've got 3 or 4 pictures of cakes that you may have seen done or were there when they were done, but there's no way you're going to get that precision out of your hand skills. So it's one of those things that you're going to eventually, it's a really dangerous bag, because you don't ever want to get called on not being able to execute what you clearly had posted that was yours.
Tonight we have the one and only Cupcake Casey, former culinary educator of the year. Follow him on Instagram.
He's on it again. I love it.
STLpastry.com.
that was a good time. That was right in there. That was good.
It really was good.
Yeah, man, I think I agree with you there. You don't want to post a picture and then someone asks you to recreate it, and you're like, wait, what? That'd be terrible. Because as a chef, it's hard enough for me personally. Like, I don't write down everything I make. I actually use Instagram and my phone to take pictures of stuff so I remember it. it's the truth. Like, I can't fucking remember all this shit. I had my client recently ask me if I could recreate some steam buns that I made in the past, and I was like, wait, I made steam buns? And so I had to go back through Instagram and find them. So that's what I'm doing on Friday. I have to make these steam buns. But it's going to be delicious. But now that I remember them, Jeff, for you, you make a shit ton of food, man, every day. And I know at your job, you guys are legit as fuck. You guys are fermenting things and making tons and pints of ice cream. What do you use to remember what you've made in the past? Jeff?
What did you just say?
What do you use to remember the food you've made in the past?
Instagram, for sure. And also I have an impeccable memory. I can recall things. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, so but you use your Instagram to look back at some things. If your client's like, hey, could you make this? Could you make this?
Yeah, if my boss is like, oh my gosh, remember when you made last whatever? I have to like literally go through pictures and try to like guesstimate around what day that I worked and try to see what I had made and be like, oh god, that okay, yeah, okay, I remember that now. You know, but
Casey, is the same for you? I mean, I know, do you guys have like such a set curriculum you have to follow, or can you veer from it and make things a little different, or say, you know what, today we're going to talk about tempering chocolate when I'm supposed to be talking about, you know, making ice cream?
Yeah, I mean, the benefit to what I do is I have a really great prescribed curriculum that leads them on an arc for building skills. So we're pretty prescribed with our what we do. Also, you know, we also have requisitions that, you know, I can't just all of a sudden go, hey, I want to do something and I don't have the ingredients in house either. But I definitely think that it's really important that you archive everything. And, you know, my students don't understand why note taking is so important in Absolutely. School. And it's because I have, you know, 13 spiral bound, you know, notebooks that I just have handwritten notes from my classes when I was in school.
Yeah.
And those are the best thing, because now you go back. It's so important to have an archive that you can kind of, and it's hilarious, because I found a menu that I had done in my plated desserts class, and I use it in my classes now, and I say, listen, I want you guys to save these menus that you made, because they think they're just the killer, the number one menu. This is awesome. And then, you know, in 10 years, that menu is going to look so juvenile and so basic.
You're so
and
right.
I remember what I mean, I thought I was like walking on water when I turned in that project when I was at school. And then I look at it and I go, really? A cheesecake that I cut into a heart shape? Give me a break. Like, I thought I was just king of the world.
A heart-shaped cheesecake. I am the motherfucking shit. No one's ever done that shit. That's what's
up. Oh, yeah. And you know what? It was pink. It was using strawberry in there. Boom!
What?
Mic drop.
Wow. You mind if I do that?
Jeff's taking notes right now. Hey, did you put whipped cream on it?
I'm taking notes, man. That was... That's, you
guys, yeah, yeah. You know, so I love it, because I see and in a couple of my classes, they're practical exams. They actually have to set up a dessert buffet with all the products that they've made. And I challenge them to have a theme, and I challenge them to bring props. And it's all for picture worthy, you know, things. So that way they have that portfolio being built from their minute one. If you start the concept of having a portfolio, you know, Jeff, you can absolutely attest to this, that's the number one item that you can put some sort of value to a person is based on a portfolio.
Definitely. Yeah, you can when you see what they've done and their food, it definitely gives you a little glimpse into the kind of chef that they are. You know, you can look at someone's dishes and how they put their food together and their flavor combinations and stuff like that, and definitely kind of get a feel for them.
That's why I think Instagram is like a living, breathing portfolio, constantly changing and evolving. You can see great pictures of food with the occasional picture of a cat taking a nap or a dog jumping. But if you look past that, you can see some amazing food pictures. You know?
I have one thing to say, add to that, though, that I think is that it's dangerous with Instagram is that in Instagram, everything's like and rightfully so. I'm not saying that I don't do this, too, but we all like take the best shot, right? And that's not real life all the time.
Every you know picture I mean? On Instagram you see of my food is exactly what my food looks like.
That's true, but sure. Yeah.
I just made change the lighting. Dave, don't laugh.
What? No, it does. I've been there. I've seen it.
there you go. Listen, man. Final question for you, gentlemen, man, as it gets late, and I appreciate your time tonight. I really do. It's been a lot of fun sitting here at the round table. I wish we could have had Rob with us, but Rob had technical difficulties. He couldn't get on with us. I think it was more of a vodka difficulties than it was a technical difficulties. But culinary school. I mean, you got two guys who went to culinary school here and two guys who didn't. And, you know, I've always said for me, school is you get out of it what you put into it. And for me, school was a thing I needed to have at the time. I needed it. I was going down a really bad path. And school was good for me. I want to get you guys all your takes on it, man, and see if you would do things differently. Would you go back to school? Would you do it again? Or Casey, if you went to school, would you realize, I probably didn't need to do that? So let's start with Dave. Dave, if you could go to culinary school now, would you do it?
Like right now or a few years ago?
Maybe, I mean, it's 11:15 here on the East Coast. So I mean, right this second. I don't know if any classes are happening. I mean, if you go to CIA, then the classes are happening in about 3 hours because you have to do AM pantry. But no, just in general, man. Would you go to school now if you could? Or is it maybe school in your future or some classes in your future?
Possibly some classes. I don't know about, like, the whole, like, culinary school as a program, but definitely classes to, like, tighten some things up and, you know, make my technique a little more solid.
Yeah. Jeff, what about you, brother?
I didn't go to culinary school. I went to school for art and just worked my whole life in the industry. And I just read tons of books, and I still read tons of books and play around with foods. And, you know, I'm lucky enough. I say living the dream all the time because I have a great client who's like a proprietor of mine who lets me buy amazing equipment and just encourages me to, like, push the envelope with things and try new things all the time. So I get to. So it's a... I don't know if I'd want to go back to school at this point.
But if you look at Jeff's food, you'll see what he's talking about. Jeff doesn't need to go to school, but you know Jeff's food is
amazing.
No,
it's not that. I just don't know if I'd want like I would much rather have like round table. I would rather cook with like have pop ups or charity like I'm trying to do now and like have great chefs come in and cook and just crush really awesome like menus with people and come up with some really great ideas and like you know kind of bounce ideas and like. That kind of stuff. That to me, that would be like priceless. Yeah. You know, like
you know, for me, culinary school really kind of gave me the direction I needed. It gave me the discipline I so desperately needed and craved in my life. I didn't know I craved it, but I did. It put me on the path that's got me to here. You know, I always say food has been great to me in my life. Food has provided me with my wife and three beautiful children and has put a roof over my head. Whenever I need it, food is fucking there for me to put a roof over my head and pay my bills. So, but to me, the culinary school helped put me on that path, helped me validate it, helped me appreciate it because I wasn't there yet. I wasn't, you know, where Jeff is where I could do it. And I wasn't where Dave is. To me, it was just a job. So Dave is building a career here. Casey, for you, brother, what do you think?
Well, I think that there's another school of thought to look at, and that is, you know, it's.
But
it's
wait,
a definite
wait, but before you say that, I want to clarify. I'm not saying there's a right or wrong either here.
No, absolutely not. But what I'd like to bring up is the cost of culinary school is outrageous. Yeah. For these proprietary schools that are giving promises of grandeur and without delivering on the basic skills. What I absolutely love and what I never knew growing up was that there's an amazing world of community college that exists that are rigorous, amazing programs that give you a fully transferable degree. Just as, you know, the art degree is going to absolutely get you ready for business world and all of the other items that come along with the ancillary education, not just the focus into art. But same thing goes with culinary, that, you know what, you have to learn about what marketing is. You have to learn about cost control. You have to know what the industry is. You have to have safety and sanitation. You have to know all the ins and outs of the so-called book world before you can absolutely, you know, take that transition into a chef world, because I think that all of us as executive chefs could definitely tell you that I wish that I had much more time actually putting my hands into food when I was in the restaurant world, when I was in the hotel world, because as a manager, you're tasked with so many other things, and that prepares you via the culinary school channel. Again, there's the number two default rate of school loans are culinary students because there are unrealistic salary expectations going in to the first jobs as well. So I think that I am very, very proud to be connected with St. Louis Community College, that we have – it's about just over $7,000 for a two-year, fully transferable Associate of Applied Science degree.
Bro, that's, and the that's great not thing bad at is, all. That's great.
No. And we're also
get a degree.
Contextualizing.
In the end, you don't get a certificate. You get an actual degree.
Associate of Applied Science. Fuck no, it's an actual degree. And we've contextualized every one of our general education courses so that there's a math course that's specifically for culinary pastry and hospitality students. There is a sociology course that's teaching food and culture. There's our – I have an art class that's about to take precedence in January for all of my students that are going to teach them how to draw in three dimensions, how to put colors together, how to take photos and do some basic photo editing.
Wow.
Because as pastry chefs, we are artists as well. So there's all of these ancillary things that the culinary school brings to the party.
Dave, that's cool as shit, man. Did you hear that? You could actually go to his school and get a culinary degree. Bro, I went to CIA. It's no secret. I paid a shit fucking ton of money. This year I paid off all of our college. I have no more college loans due.
Congratulations.
But I think I'm the exception to the rule. I think a lot of guys, Casey was pointing out, he's right. You come in with these unreal expectations. You come out of the school, you're going to go get a job where you make $15 an hour. Like, that's the reality of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. And you're getting a job that you're going to make $15 an hour with your culinary degree that, guess what? Other people who don't have a culinary degree are going to come in and make $17. Like, you're going to be the bottom of the pole. People are going to hate you because of your degree at first. That's the true story. But
yeah.
You know, with Casey talking about the program at his school, I mean, $7,000, you get yourself a degree, you get a great basis, you're not going to be paying it off the rest of your life, and they're even teaching you about, like, photo editing. That's some pretty, like, forward-thinking bullshit right there, Jeff. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I think, and listen, I think I'm all for education. I wish that I listened to teachers in high school who told me to go to a vocational school and learn more cooking because I loved home ec, and I kind of like laughed because I thought that was for like the slow kids,
yeah.
And you know, like, you know, like, and I you know, it's like ridiculous. I wish I'd learned some of those things that now I had to learn like later in life. You know, I had a mentor, thank God. Like, you know, and I tried to go to, I was going to go to culinary school later in life. I was going to do like an extended education program. But I agree with what Casey was just saying. It was just so expensive. It was like prohibitively expensive. And it's like super long hours. And like there was an option to like work there also for more, you know, for money to supplement some of your income. But that was even more hours. So it's like it would be like an 80-hour week, you know. And I was just like, that's insane. I'd rather just get a job and work my ass off and for somebody.
That's what I did in culinary school, man. I had to work. I worked on campus I ran one.
Yeah, but then at the end of that, you owe them money. And I just couldn't wrap my head around that. I'm like, sweet.
They gave me a paycheck, so I was okay with it.
I cook in your restaurant, and then I cook in your restaurant again later. And then I, like, because you don't even, like, part of the classes that you work. You know, part of your class.
I know.
So I was just kind of like.
Well, I'd like to throw one thing in here, and that is for all the chefs listening. You know, you need to honor your commis, your cooks that are working for you. You need to honor their decision if they would like to put education before your kitchen. And I know so many chefs in industry that once they get a cook who they see talent in, they say, you don't need to go to school. You come with me. I'll train you. You know, that's not fair to that student. And you need to work with their school schedule. You need to let them take that path because, you know what, they are talented, and the jobs that are going to be available to them with a degree are going to be the higher commission jobs later in life. And so to all of the chefs, don't be that chef who tries to talk people out of school either.
Amen, bro.
I think that's super true. My mentor tried to get me to, he wanted to force me to go to culinary school, and I refused. Because I told him he was high. I was like, there's no way I'm going. Because he closed his restaurant for 2 years, and he wanted me to go finish my degree and then come back and work for him. And I ended up going to New York instead because I was just like, that's crazy.
Man,
I'm not working. I'm not doing it. But I was already like, you know, 26 or something like that. So it was like, there's no, you know, I was already like, I felt like a grown person, you know.
Wow. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate your time this evening, man. I mean, this is a pretty lively conversation. It was heated almost. Like, it was definitely some stuff thrown out there and some good knowledge for people, some good things to build blocks on for young culinarians coming up in the business. That's why I love these roundtables, man. You get different point of views from people. Big shout out to you, Casey. Thanks for taking the time to come on. Make sure you follow him on Instagram at STL Pastry on Instagram. Bro, it's been too long, but I do look forward to seeing you hopefully at the NRA's Pro Start event next year, if not beforehand.
Yeah, let's do it soon.
There you go. And of course, dude, you're the man, brother. You're a good brother. I like good brothers. And of course, big shout out to the one and only Chef Jeff Perazzi, JK Chef Collection. And of course, all the stuff that he's got going on when it comes to doing private chef stuff. You ever checked him out at Forking Chef? You see the food this man makes. It's inspirational. It makes me feel like less of a man when I look at the soups. I hate the way you plate soup up. It makes me feel like I have no penis.
Why? It's the only course I remember to take pictures of. It's terrible. I always forget to do everything else. I'm like...
Well, they're gorgeous. They're gorgeous. Oh, Casey, last thing. When you have these people doing their practicals with you where they have to do like a buffet to plate shit up to make it look pretty, keep that non-functional garnish out of there, all right? I don't want to see a teddy bear there for no fucking reason.
No problem. And we'll make sure that there are plenty of heart cutters for every cheesecake.
Yes.
There you go. So check Jeff out at Forking Chef. And, of course, big shout out to the one, the only, one of the best co-hosts on the planet. There's his music. You guys can't hear it, but he's playing music right there. He's the best around. The one, the only, Chef Dave Boredom. Make sure you follow him at Dave Boredom on Instagram. Dave, final thoughts.
Rock over London, rock on France.
Rock on Chicago. Does anybody else remember that? Holy shit. Amtrak is the only way to travel. There you go. Hey, you guys, put Dave in your thoughts, man. He's got a big interview tomorrow, man. Think about him. He's making a big, hopefully making a big life change here coming up, man. So very proud of him through everything he's gone through. Dave, seriously, man, very proud of you, brother. Could not be more happy for you. I'm so glad things are going this way. Can't wait to get you out here on the East Coast. I know you'll kill it tomorrow. So congratulations on all that, and I hope it goes well.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate it. Really do.
100%. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to end this program. Let me get this music turned up here. Please remember, ladies and gentlemen, food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life happens around food. Make sure you give it the time it deserves. Shout out to Cupcake Casey. Shout out to Dave. Shout out to the one and only Chef Jeff Perazzi. We'll see you guys next week right here. Peace.
If you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.